House Committee on Environment and Energy, March 10th, 1989, Hearing Room E.
I'll call the March 10th session of the House Committee on Environment and Energy to order. And we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2698.
And, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't get you.
Oh, okay.
You went so fast. Yes, it's a little bit too swift for me to. Here we go.
Thank you. And ask Bill Rogers and Teresa Wilson from Lane County to come up. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Rogers, Lane County Commissioner, and with me is Assistant County Counsel Terry Wilson. Terry is the attorney who drafts or reviews the contracts with which we deal. Don't be terrified because of all the stuff handed out to you. We're going to cut down pretty quickly. I think, Mr. Chairman, you were the only one on the Intergovernmental Affairs Committee when we came and asked that this bill be introduced and went through some of the detail there. But what we have is a parcel of land where our landfill was for many years. It has been moved into another area quite a long while ago. This has been thoroughly tested in there so that we're not concerned about the toxic materials or waste, methane. We thought maybe we could mine a little methane out of it, and there wasn't even any there to get. So we've come up with the idea of putting a golf course in. There have been a number of studies that have shown that the Eugene Springfield area will support quite a few more holes, golf courses, and it looks like a good thing to do with this. It's near the interstate. It would be an attractive enhancement for the community, a good use of the land. And so we set out, hired consultants to do all these studies to tell us this. And as a part of that, they used a legal counsel for consulting, and they discovered that in the law there's a provision that says that we would have to go to a vote of all the people in the county to accomplish this. Or at least that's our interpretation of this, because the alienation or a long-term lease, and that's not defined. We're not sure. There's some case law on it. An alienation of the land would be the same as selling. So what we're looking for here is a change in the law that would give two counties such as us the same rights that now exist for all the cities and Multnomah County. Multnomah County had come in and had gotten to change the law in 1981 to allow them to do this because they had a similar circumstance. We have, somewhere I've got it in, we have 66 parks in Lane County, and because of our financial situation, we are able to maintain only 13 of those for public use. What we will do with this particular operation would be to utilize whatever revenues are derived from it to stay in the parks program. That's a provision of the law, that money would stay in the parks program, and so it would enable us to better operate some of our other parks. Someone's going to ask some very tough legal question about some part of this, and so I brought with me Terry Wilson, Teresa Wilson, to answer those. And so if Terry has anything she'd like to comment on, she had some prepared remarks that explain the various sections of the bill. You have, thanks to your staff, Carol Kirchner, a hand-engrossed copy of House Bill 2698, because we found after it was in printed form that there were two things that should have been made a part of this. I also want to say at this time that we are very appreciative of the good assistance that we've had from Carol. Our staff has been working with her on this matter, and she has been extremely helpful to us, and we thoroughly appreciate that.
We appreciate that, Bill. In fact, we've been pleased with it enough that we're going to keep her at least
through
June.
You're going to keep her at least through next week.
Right.
Let me ask you, I'm personally loath to see any local government get rid of any parkland, but when you're in a situation as you are, which I guess is not uncommon, where many of those parks are, I take it, are no longer being maintained in any real fashion, what happens to that property after a period of time? I mean, you still own the property, it's still out there as a park, but when it's not maintained, what finally happens to it?
Well, there are many things that happen. One of them is that they just deteriorate. We once had facilities on many of these parcels. Those have been vandalized. We've had to remove them basically because of the vandalism. We tried boarding up some of the restroom facilities. People would tear into them. We tried chaining them, cabling the entrances. They get in and cut the cables, the chains, pull those out. They tear up, and then the weeds and the brush grow, and they become attractive nuisances, as much as anything, and we still have some liability that's associated with them. But they're just there, and that's about the best thing that you can say for them. We don't anticipate, unless something remarkably unusual happens, we don't anticipate being able to open any of these others that are actually closed, but try to keep some that we have marginally open in better shape and do some maintenance. We use an automobile rental tax. That money is dedicated to our parks program, and we put a little bit of general fund money into it. But primarily our parks are funded by the automobile rental tax and by the user fees that we have.
Representative Keasley.
Yeah, Bill, question, I was amused you mentioned all these hard-pressed legal questions we're going to get, none of us being lawyers or anything. Do the best that we can. Under this bill, if Lane County, or of course this would apply to any other county that wanted to do the same, made a decision to enter into a long-term lease or take it on a parkland, and it was an unpopular decision, could the decision of the county governing body be subject to an initiative process that people could ask that it be put on the ballot and voted on? If
Mr. Chairman, Representative Keesling, that's correct. The referendum process is available.
Or
initiative, either one, to deal with anything of this kind. We've had a great deal of publicity given to this, the editorials on it, everything. And I get an occasional comment from someone about this playground down there, or Jerry's Memorial Park. We have a commissioner named Jerry Rust, who has been most involved in developing this idea. But no one objects to it. We have had a great deal of support for it. There was actually a committee of local people who had gotten together to push this concept.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chair, I'm not concerned so much about the particular case in Lane County, but this, of course, is a... What we did, I guess, in 1981 is we responded to a specific situation with Multnomah County, and to narrow the bill, we put the population limit on it. We could do the same thing this time and put a population limit of 200,000 on it, and it would affect Lane County but not Sherman County. The way the bill is drafted, it would affect all counties, and I just wanted to explore whether there is some checks perhaps for other counties to use it if the decision were unpopular.
I might to ask Terry to give some response. We feel that there is a good public purpose behind this bill. It's not just exclusive to us. You've very
right.
accurately identified that. And Terry has done a great deal of work on this and might want to make some response.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission or the committee, I knew I'd do that. Too used to talking to county commissioners. The law, the way it is presently written, appears to apply to all counties already, but it is very, very confusing. And for a large project such as the one we're talking about, where we will very likely be developer with private financing, then the authority of a county to engage in a contract gets scrutinized much more closely. What the bill attempts to do is to simply make the language that's been in the law clear. It doesn't attempt to change any of the voters' rights to challenge the decision of their local government at all.
And I
wouldn't want to do that. There is also, in the present law, a public hearing requirement.
Mm-hmm.
So the citizenry can come and discuss any objections they've got to the proposed action. There is further the requirement that any revenues received off of the transaction go back into the county park system, either for future parks or for existing parks. So I think those kinds of limitations help to solve some of the questions you were bringing up.
Let me ask you, of course, Lane County is a home rule county.
Yes. Yes.
Most of them are statutory counties, but what kinds of actions of counties, by which means, are subject to initiative referendum?
Generally, legislative actions are the ones that are subject to initiative and referendum. Pure administrative actions aren't, as a rule. The context in which the decision is made will make that difference. That's a lawyer's answer, and I'm not sure it's the one you want that satisfies you. But
I guess the question whether the disposal of a piece of property clearly be subject to.
I'm not sure that would be clearly subject to initiative and referendum. What it is subject to is the writ of review procedure at the court level, where there would be a challenge as to the substantial evidence, a substantial basis for the decision.
Let me ask you then, another question. We passed a bill, I think, a couple of sessions ago, maybe it was longer than that authorized counties to essentially use the kind of ordinance process that cities have. Is it your understanding, Bill, that counties do now, do they use the ordinance process?
Mr. Chairman, actually I think in 1973 the legislature gave ordinance making powers. I wasn't in the legislature then, but I heard Glenn Otto refer to it as many times I accepted his truth, that in 1973 they were given that authority. And since then, except for the form of governance in the county, just about everything else is available to statutory counties that home rule counties have. Terry's going to correct me if I'm wrong, but it has evolved over that period of time. Your statement is correct, but I'm not sure which session it was.
Reason I asked that question, and I want everybody to understand, I was not here in the session in 73. Representative Jones may have been, but I don't know about the rest. Anyway.
She was a mere child.
Mere child.
1973.
Would there be a problem if we were to say that the county may do this by ordinance? I guess that was what I was leading up to. I detect some unease over whether there would in fact be an opportunity for the public, if it had a concern about the disposal of a park, that it would clearly have an opportunity to be heard and raise its fuss about it.
The ordinance procedure would not change the public hearing requirement, which presently exists. Given that I practice with a home rule county, I'm not sure that it would change the initiative referendum question.
Okay. Well, I guess the issue is if you look at the proposed change that is in the printed bill,
mm-hmm.
it says that the county may do these things, or a public body may do these things upon a finding that is in the best interest of the public. I guess what I was getting at, what would be the nature of the finding? By what mechanism would you do that?
I'm used to dealing with findings and land use issues, and I'm trying to think of the application of findings of fact and anything else.
In this case, it would be the basic standard that it would be held up against would be one of a general county purpose. The finding that it was in the public's best interest could be reviewed by a court, as I said, in that writ of review proceeding. There would have to be evidence on the record, substantial evidence on the record, of facts that suggest that facts that show that the county commissioners considered and balanced what was in the public's interest versus what wasn't. Public's interest is a judgment call.
Right.
But there would have to be facts which would support that decision in the record, and the county commissioners would have to enunciate what it was they were relying on to support their decision that that transaction was in the county's best interest or in the public's best interest.
Okay. Representative Hostica.
And all of this has to be done through the open meetings process.
Absolutely.
With hearings and all of that stuff.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Weehead.
I've been looking at this wording that's being deleted on page 2, and the way I read it, it seems to allow what you want to do right now. And am I?
Yes.
There are probably half of the counties or more agree. And then there is the conservative opinion that we had received that suggests that that language is confusing, and that it can be read as an exception to an exception rather than more straightforwardly as you are reading it. It is for that reason that we asked that this change be drafted, to make it more clear.
So even though it may be okay, you're trying to head off any court.
Exactly. We're trying to handle a problem in advance so that we won't have a problem at the financing end.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I follow up question on this. With this change in wording now, it almost appears as though Section 1 of this ORS section is totally unnecessary, because Section 2, I guess it's subsection 2, basically says that if the county finds that it's in the best interest of the public, they can go ahead and do it. And all of Section 1 addresses a series of similar allowances under certain provisions. And then you get back to Section 2 now in this proposed wording, and it seems to just say, go ahead and do it if you feel like it's okay, or if you've decided that it's in the best interest of the public.
Section 1 leaves in place a provision that the lands could be conveyed without compensation to a park and recreation district for a large county, for Multnomah County. It leaves in place the intergovernmental type of arrangement between county involving these kinds of either county parks or county forest lands. Mm-hmm. Neither of those would be subject to that public hearing requirement. In addition, Section 1 leaves in place the concept that you can put out to a vote of the people a disposition of county park property, in which case Section 1 does not require that the funds be reinvested in parks. So in that respect, I think there is a purpose still to Section 1.
I see. Yeah, those are good reasons.
And Mr. Chairman,
yes.
Representative Weehage, we discussed that. And it's not that we disagree with you on that question, but we prefer not to delve into some other people's turf. I mean, to get it right out here.
All right.
Multnomah County asked for that, and they had some purposes for it. And So we're leaving it alone.
Other questions?
Statutory accretion.
Representative Jones.
Maybe the staff is the best person to answer this, but can you give me the specifics as to why the population cap was put in there, or the population? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, this, before you came in, and referred...
Well, I heard it was Multnomah County, but for what purpose?
Well, they had a parcel of land similar to ours that they wanted to develop or turn over to a recreation district.
Okay.
And so they came in with specific language. For whatever reason, whether it was the committee that wanted it that way or whether they requested, the legislative history, which is attached to your package, is not clear. And I talked with AOC people, and they had no memory of this particular item.
Okay, and I guess the question basically is, you wouldn't have any objection if that cap or trigger was removed. It doesn't.
Well,
as long as some of the other language changes took place, I think we'd have no objection. I think removing the cap alone probably doesn't clean up the language in the way we've been asked.
I understand.
Representative Jones, what I'd like to do is to report this bill out. I think the request for the amendment is to do what I think the people wanted and get rid of it. If we keep it any longer and have other amendments, then we've got to invite the other people in who might be affected by it. But I think your desire would be to move it out, wouldn't it?
Mr. Chairman, we're anxious to get started on this and make a contract so that we can go ahead with this construction season.
Other questions? Not? Is there further testimony on this bill? Thank you very much. I will close the hearing on House Bill 2698 and open the work session of House Bill 2698.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Parkinson.
Are you ready for the amendments?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move the amendments labeled 2698-1 into House Bill 2698.
Any objections to the proposed amendment? If not, go ahead, Representative Parkinson, and then I'll make a motion.
Speak to my motion?
Yes. Well, no, there's no objection to the amendment. I've accepted the amendment.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 2698 to the floor to do pass recommendation as amended.
As amended. Any questions or comments?
Mr. Chair,
yes, Representative
I just can't resist this comment. It's probably the fastest we've ever dealt with anything that I've seen this committee do.
You will be fine that we'll be moving a lot faster, Representative
Well, that's delightful. Thank you.
Now that you've got sufficient education through all of our general broad-gauged educational hearings, I think it's time to move. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Hostica.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
President Keithley.
Aye.
Vice Chair Parkinson.
Aye.
President Pickard.
Aye.
Representative Weekly.
Aye.
Representative Agron.
Excused. Excused.
Representative Cherises.
Aye. The motion passes, and I will ask Representative Parkinson to carry the bill. And our work session on 2698 is done.
Good luck.
I will now open the hearing on House Bill 2051. What? Would you like to hear the bill? Well, that's fine. That's
Fred can carry it if he wants.
No, that's fine. I'll give him money so that he can carry it. That's fine. Let's do that. Since it relates to your county. Open the hearing on House Bill 2051. Relating to uranium mines.
Wait a minute, they're not here. You've gone too fast. They're not here.
Well, it'll take us a while to read everything that we've gotten.
Fred, let's go ahead with that, and then I'll give you another one.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. That's fine.
You know, when we last left off on this bill,
we are in a slight recess until our... There we are.
Sorry.
That's fine.
A slight recess.
Our slight recess is over.
Slight recess.
Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Michael Graney, Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. The last time we held a hearing on this issue, House Bill 2051, there were a couple of open items that wanted to get information back to the committee on. Just briefly to refresh your memory, this bill affects the two abandoned uranium mines in Lake County. Last session, we were in the middle of a cleanup project of the abandoned mill tailings from the mill site in the city of Lakeview, and we had a court opinion that said that even though it was a federally financed project, the state should have gone through the state siting procedure, the state licensing procedure, even though there would have been no willing applicant. It was an abandoned mill tailings site, and it was a federally financed project. We subsequently came to the legislature for clarification on the mill tailings statutes because the federal government at that time had told us that they would not finish the project if we didn't get that statute clarified because, as a matter of federal law, they could not participate in a state licensing process. The mill tailings cleanup project is just about complete, and there are two abandoned mines that the Forest Service is interested in cleaning up that are largely on Forest Service land, and they would clean up the entire contaminated mine sites. When we discussed this issue previously, I think there was some confusion as to what the basis of the federal government's posture is and the applicable federal and state laws. I have provided for you further clarification from our Attorney General on two points. One, that the current state law is as to whether a state site certificate would normally be required is frankly very confusing. There are sections in the statutes that are contradictory that could be read either way, and it's precisely the same confusion that we had on the mill tailings statutes a couple of years ago. More significantly, though, the Attorney General's letter makes it very clear that the federal government would not participate in a state licensing process. We also have a letter from the Forest Service confirming that. I think that it's important, though, in recognizing that what we are not talking about precluding any standards necessarily by this legislation. The Forest Service in their letter and the Attorney General in their letter indicate that in these federal funded Superfund cleanups, the federal government will work with the state agency to determine the applicable federal and state standards. And in general, the federal government will take the stricter of the federal or state standards with some limited exceptions that are outlined in the Attorney General's letter. The Forest Service is willing to fund the project, and in contrast to the mill tailings cleanup project, this would be 100% financed by the Forest Service rather than a 90-10 match like the earlier project was. It's also important to, I think, to keep in mind that what we're looking at primarily down there is probably not a radioactive problem, it's a toxic problem. There is radioactivity at the site. We haven't done the monitoring yet that needs to be done, the baseline monitoring, to really define that problem. Once that work is done, the Forest Service is just beginning that now, we will be in a better position to determine what standards are necessary. Whether standards regarding toxic substances, heavy metals, perhaps some of the standards regarding radioactive materials that were used in the mill tailings project, as well as other standards that we already have in current law. In addition, I think there was some discussion last time that is this an attempt to get around ballot measure 9 standards? And the answer is no. Our ballot measure 9 standards will be completed by sometime this summer. Draft rules have been issued on that. Once those rules are in place, the monitoring will continue, and after the monitoring is done, we'll have a better sense of determining whether those ballot measure 9 rules would even be applicable under a normal state licensing process. They may or may not. It depends on the nature of the material down there. The toxic material would not be, the radioactive material might be if it was larger than what's called the pathway exemption that triggers the ballot measure 9 standards. Those are issues that at this point we just don't know. And all this bill says is that the state does not have to try to impose a state licensing procedure or process on the federal government, so that we'll clear that hurdle away so that we can go ahead and begin the work.
Let me ask you, Mike, and do I get the clear sense that if the state attempted to impose that licensing system that there would be difficulty with the federal agencies on that?
Yes, sir. That's correct.
But as far as the standards go, they have said in this letter, or I guess it said earlier too, that they would work with either set of standards, and probably we're talking about a combination of the two.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and a combination of really all state standards, DEQ standards if they're applicable regarding toxic materials, as well as our standards on radioactive materials.
And Measure 9, if it were applicable, would apply only to the radioactivity?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps only to the overburden. That's not entirely clear. Ballot Measure 9 is a statute that's not very clearly written.
Who would carry the financial burden of the cleanup?
The Forest
A month later, 2 days before this hearing, we suddenly are delivered the evidence that somehow or another makes the case for this bill, House Bill 2051. Now, I didn't get the letters until yesterday in the mail. I faxed this material to John Bonine at the University of Oregon Law School to ask him his opinion on this, and he faxed me back just 15 or 20 minutes ago his letter, and I would like to read that to you if I can. Dear Mr. Marbot, I refer to my telephone discussion yesterday evening and materials received from you, including a copy of a letter from Mr. Walter Perry, Department of Justice, to Michael Graney, Department of Energy, dated March 6, 1989, received by you yesterday. As I read House Bill 2051, it would exempt uranium mill tailings and uranium mine overburden from both state site certificates and state rules. Mr. Perry suggests that federal law preempts state law. Even Mr. Perry takes care to say only that the site certificate would be preempted, whereas the proposed bill would appear to block state standards rules as well. But Mr. Perry is wrong in stating that even the site certificate permit would be preempted. First, Mr. Perry has misquoted 42 U.S. Code 9621 subpart E subpart 1 in the letter. The section provides that no state permit shall be required for a federal cleanup entirely on site. The letter instead suggests a state permit would not be required if cleanup were at or near the contaminated area, unquote. This is a substantial difference, as there is no indication that the cleanup at the Lake County site would be, quote, entirely, unquote, on site. I am not sure just why the statutory phrase was not quoted in its entirety. In the context of the concerns raised by Mr. Perry, preemption will only occur where the site is on the National Priorities List, CERCLA. I am informed that the site is not on the National Priorities List, though it may be put onto a different list in the future. Should the identified site be placed on the National Priorities List, preemption would then occur as a matter of law. Preemption also occurs only where the state standards are more stringent for federal than for non-federal facilities in the same state. Here, the state law does not discriminate or distinguish between federal and non-federal facilities, so it is not preempted. There is the possibility that the bill could have unintended effects, and of course, one would want to examine it from that standpoint. I have not had the opportunity to examine the question of state involvement in a federal cleanup, but there is a question of public involvement. The current state law provides for that. It is not clear whether the public would have the same rights and involvement in a purely federal operation. I enclose copies of the most recent version of CERCLA 9620 and 9621 for your reference.
Thank you very much, Lloyd. Questions? Comments? Appreciate your testimony. Mr. Perry? Mike, why don't you come up, too, because I have two or three questions I want to ask you. Is there a clear sense that we are revisiting the same issue that we had last time with the Lakeview. It was basically the same as the Lakeview problem.
Mr. Chairman, yes, we think so. We think the statutes are unclear. I mean, you've seen Mr. Perry's letters. You've seen the arguments that Mr. Marmette has made contrary. And I think, frankly, an argument could be made either way as to whether current law requires a state site certificate. And it is confusing. And the problem we face is that the federal government has indicated very clearly that whether or not current law requires a state site certificate, they would not participate in that process.
How long have those sites been there unused? What period of time are we talking
about? Since the early to mid-1960s.
Is there an indication that the federal agency is prepared to clean those up?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. They have begun a technical working group involving a number of federal and state and local agencies that we're participating in to design a study of the site area, and also to determine what the next step would be, also an environmental review pursuant to the National Environmental Policy Act they're anticipating doing.
Now, if the federal government, federal agency, went ahead to clean them up, what would be the relationship between the agency and your agency?
With both the legislation that we've proposed and with our understanding of the federal laws that they would be operating under, they would work with us to hopefully reach agreement on what the appropriate standards would be. We would also involve other state agencies if the expertise involves, for example, DEQ or Department of Water Resources, as we did on the mill tailings project. Ultimately, the decision would have to be the Federal Forest Service as to what standards would be used, but federal law does require them to work with the states, and that's one point where I disagree with Mr. Marbet. He indicated the state standards are stricter than the federal government. That may or may not be true depending on what substances we're dealing with, and the Forest Service has indicated that to me that generally they take the stricter of the federal state standards unless the stricter standard is just unworkable.
So you're dealing both with radioactivity and with toxic materials, specifically
yes,
arsenic, but with other toxic materials as well?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
But clearly if there's a cleanup, they would be paying for it all, and unlike the Lakeview case where the state picked up its 10%, that would not be true in these instances.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, and the reason it would not be true, the Lakeview case, there was a federal mandated cleanup program in federal law that required state 10% cleanup and had specific standards of its own. Basically, what the federal government in this case is working on is a combination of its General Forest Management Practices Act and, if necessary, the federal Superfund statutes, the RCRA and CERCLA statutes.
Your judgment is the state better off, or the public better off, having these cleaned up or just left them the way they are?
Mr. Chairman, I think they need to be cleaned up. I think there's risks from cattle grazing indiscriminately there. There's risks from people using that one lake potentially as a swimming hole. People camp and hunt in the area. It's Forest Service land, and until this last year, it wasn't even posted to not drink the water. These mines don't present the immediate risk that the mill tailings did, where the mill tailings were literally blowing around in the middle of the town of Lakeview. But they present, we think, a threat, and they should be cleaned up.
Let me ask you in reference to these sites. I take it I was a little unclear about the reference in the one letter and concerning your priority, but these are not viewed as priority sites by the federal agencies, are they?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is they're not currently on the national priority list. I believe the Forest Service will nominate them for inclusion in a list of federal sites that will provide priority and funding. And they do indicate to me that there is funding in their budget for the initial feasibility studies and environmental review. And that's somewhere between $2 and $3 million, I believe.
If the statute were approved, do you have any indication what the time would be for any beginning cleanup?
I think we're probably looking at least a year of studies, maybe more, and then the time to actually issue contract bids could be another, could from now could be a year and a half to 2 years before actual cleanup starts. That's my guess.
Representative Hostigan.
What's the nature of the federal objection to go through the state process?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hostigan, I think it's a matter of what the federal government views as a just a federal supremacy issue, that they do not want to be subject to state licensing jurisdiction. And their interpretation of the federal constitution is that they are not subject to state licensing jurisdiction.
Mr. Give me just a minute, I think. Mr. Jackson?
No. Ed.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ed. Come on up. Welcome.
Thank you.
I think it would be helpful because I think we've got a number of issues here. One is state regulations versus federal regulations, our standards or possible standards versus their standards, whether it will be cleaned up one way or the other, whether it will be cleaned up at all and so forth. But I think one of the issues here, and maybe we'll never get a complete answer to it, but I think you could help us on it, and that is there clearly an understanding or a sense that the federal government is not likely to move forward with cleaning up these sites if they have to go through the state process?
Mr. Chairman, Ed Allen, Forest Service. No, we are not likely to not go to clean them up with the licensing process. We will clean them up anyway. As I understand things going around, and I'm not an attorney, so I can't give you a learned answer, but as a general rule, we've been instructed in a lot of other cases, other situations as well, that that state licensing authorities do not, that we are not subject to state licensing authorities except in a few very rare instances. Some of those dealing with water quality, those kinds of things.
Okay. Why don't you just all three sit there for a moment. Mr. Perry, we welcome you too and be happy to take any testimony you might want you to give us.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just could only clarify my letter after the discussion we've had is that regardless of state law, it appears to me that that no licensing is required for this cleanup by the state, that there are no, where I'm speaking only of procedural requirements, that the permitting process itself would not be required. However, the law is clear that state standards will apply, that the federal government will apply them on their own to the cleanup process.
That being the case, I guess, and I'm a little unclear what the fuss is all about. Go ahead, Mr. Greeny.
Mr. Chairman, the reason we need this legislation is because in a virtually identical situation with the mill tailings, we went ahead with the federal government, and we were sued in state court by Mr. Marbet, and in the Court of Appeals, initially, he was successful with a court case that said, even though there may be federal preemption and federal government can't apply to the siting council, somebody should apply, even if that's the siting council applying to itself, and there should have been a state site licensing proceeding going on. It was that decision was subsequently vacated by the Supreme Court, but not on the merits. It was vacated for lack of jurisdiction, and we're in virtually identical situation.
They didn't look at the merits.
They didn't look at the merits. They said the Court of Appeals shouldn't have decided the case. So conceivably, if we went ahead without this legislation, we could be 2 or 3 years down the road, have a similar lawsuit and a similar decision that would stop the project potentially in midstream, at least stop state participation in the project. And then we'd be in a situation of needing to come back seeking clarifying legislation. And I remember very clearly one of the things that the members, even those who supported our bill last session, expressed a lot of frustration about the fact that we came into you in the middle of a project and really didn't give you an opportunity to review the appropriateness of the state siting requirements before we had gone ahead with the project. And we're trying to avoid that.
Thank you. Questions or comments?
Yeah.
Representative Keesling and Representative Jones.
Does Forest Service have an estimate of what kind of costs we're looking at to do the work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Keesling, some of the estimates of what we're looking at, based on staff discussions, Forest Service could be in the $10 to $15 million range, which is similar to what the mill tailings projects cost. And probably the biggest amount of the cost would be the work that would need to be done with the water, with the two ponds. That would probably be the most expensive part, some type of on-site filtration processes and cleanup of the contaminated water would probably be the biggest expenses.
Okay. On the legal issue, Mr. Perry, does 9620, the thing you cited, apply the 9621E 42 U.S. Code? Does that clause apply only to these national priorities list sites?
No, Representative Keesling. It's my understanding that it applies both to sites on the list as well as other federal facility cleanups that are not on the list.
Okay, so you disagree, as a matter of just legal interpretation, you have a disagreement with Mr. Bonin, who states in this letter that it only applies to national priorities.
That's correct. There's a disagreement.
Okay. Also, another thing, Mr. Chair, about the law. If this site were on private land, would the EFC have to be involved, in your opinion, to deal with the problem as a matter of law?
If the was cleaned up by a federal agency?
No. If the site were on, if it was private land.
Well, as I indicated in my letter, there's two or three different constituents involved here, and I think there's uncertainty as to whether or not the overburden would be covered. But as to other radioactive waste on private land with no federal involvement, I believe the EFC would be involved.
Okay, but it's the federal involvement as opposed to the ownership of the land.
That's correct.
That the issue is on. Okay, thank you.
Representative Jones.
Just briefly, if you could you tell me you indicated, I think, the cost was $10 to $15 million in the previous cleanup. Can you tell me what impact the lawsuit had on your operation, both in time and in money spent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, we, since there was no stay issued, as I recall, in the court case, it didn't halt the project. I guess from our perspective, the fortunate thing was the court decision came down while the legislature was in session. So we were able to come in and seek the clarifying legislation and continue the project, and there was no stay from the court. In terms of costs, I'm not sure I can tell you the legal costs offhand. We could get that for you.
But the actual cost of the cleanup is about $15 million?
It looks going to be closer to $18 or $19 million, it looks like, by the time the project's finished.
$18 or $19?
Yeah, whereas the mines, the initial estimate on the mines looks close to that, maybe not as much.
About 10% of that was state money?
Yes, sir.
But in these cases, there won't be any state money?
No.
Yes, Representative Jones.
And you're not sure what the legal costs were in relationship to this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jones, no, although we could find that out for you.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hostica.
Yes, I don't understand then the nature of the state involvement in this and the relationship between the state and the federal government in this project. Could you describe that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hostica, I think one of the things that we found out from working with the Federal Department of Energy on the mill tailings, it was very important to have state role and state oversight, both to determine what were standards, to be able to respond to local concerns. There was no, unlike the Forest Service, which has an office in Lakeview, there was no U.S. Department of Energy office in Lake County or anywhere in Oregon, for that matter. The federal officials were not nearby, not easy to contact. There was issues that were raised regarding the quality of the work by the contractor that we closely monitored. We had a person on site for the entire project to make sure that we were getting our 10% share's money's worth and that it met federal and state standards. So I think there is an important role for the state to play. I think the Forest Service, which has more local offices, will be easier to work with because of that. And but I think it's their desire that we be involved as well.
Go ahead. Well, I'm trying to find out the nature of the relationship. Are you under contract with the Federal Forest Service to manage a project for them? Are you an oversight agency which monitors their behavior and then decides whether it is appropriate or, you know, and this is where we start getting into it, that it complies with state standards? I mean, just what is the nature of this relationship? And since there is no state money involved, what is the interest in your department in being involved in this?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hostka, in the mill tailings project under federal law.
I don't want to know. I'll stick to this one.
Well, okay. That is related. Go ahead. I think there.
We were a partner, even though we were only a 10% share. We were legally a partner. The expertise we gained from that, the Forest Service is interested in applying and essentially having us assist them. And they have talked about having a contract with our person who was on site in Lakeview during the mill tailings cleanup continue as essentially a technical expert to assist them in designing the cleanup project and what should be done. So we would be assisting the Forest Service. We would not have a formal oversight role, but we would have the opportunity as part of the working relationship to raise concerns, either local concerns or our own, regarding standards and whether they're being implemented properly.
Well, I guess that's where, you know, then get to the legal question then, and maybe Mr. Perry can address this as a lawyer. Is then the Oregon Department of Energy acting as an agent of the federal government? And if they are, then what laws apply to the Oregon Department of Energy's activities?
I guess I'm not clear what the question is.
Well, if they have it, say that, and this is what, see, I'm not clear either. I'm trying to understand it.
Sure.
U.S. Forest Service says we want to do this project. Somehow the State Department of Energy is involved. Okay, is the State Department of Energy involved as a contractor to the U.S. Forest Service, operating then as an agent of the U.S. Forest Service, with the U.S. Forest Service being the primary actor to whom all the laws apply, or is the State Department of Energy acting as an independent actor subject to the laws of Oregon?
I think the State Department of Energy is acting as an independent agency cooperating with the federal agency, and so which it, you know, has a statute.
So, and then what's the objection of having the State Department of Energy then follow the rules of the state of Oregon and the laws and the standards of the state of Oregon? Why are we passing a law here, or being asked to pass a law which exempts them from that?
I think it's mainly to avoid a unnecessary litigation. It's clear in my mind that the state permitting process doesn't apply anyway, but there's always fruit for litigation regardless under the state law. But this would clarify that and make that type of litigation unnecessary.
Let me give for the committee. Go ahead.
Final question. Is there then a way that the relationship could be described as a matter of contractual relationship between the state of Oregon and the state and the U.S. Forest Service to indicate that the U.S. Forest Service is the responsible party and the state is only acting as their agent as a way of getting to that issue rather than having us pass this law?
I'm not sure that would achieve the same goals as this law, but I think that could be established there. I believe the Department of Energy and the Forest Service are working on a memorandum of understanding, and I think that the relationship could be clarified in that document as to that the department is not acting as an agent of the federal government, but is acting as a representative of the state.
Let me give the committee a little background, because so much of what you're dealing here in the toxic area, you're dealing with federal agency activity and you're dealing with state activity. You're dealing with federal law and you're dealing with state law. And I suppose you get that most clearly if you talk about the Superfund. As I understand it, one of the problems here, and I think that was one of the issues in Lakeview,
There are a lot of sites, a lot of toxic sites. In the case of Lakeview, it was uranium tailings all over the country. We know that if you look at those sites, a lot of those sites will never be cleaned up, or in many cases, if they're going to be cleaned up, they won't be cleaned up for a long period of time. As I understand it, in effect, the real interest in cleaning these sites up is on the part of the State Department of Energy. Is that correct? Is that where the real interest is?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and the local office of the Forest Service.
And the local office of the Forest Service. And you get a clear indication that as long as you're aggressive and supportive on here and work on it, that they will work with you, and as kind of as partners, you can get it cleaned up. But unless you provide kind of the energy and the push, and they don't have to seek a state certificate, in effect, they will cooperate and do what you want them to do.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. That was essentially the same thing with the Lakeview case.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
We got an indication when you had to stop the project because of the lawsuit that I gather the federal government said that if there was a lot of fuss, they'd just walk away from it and not even bother finishing it.
The Federal Department of Energy told us that because they had limited funds in other sites. And they didn't give us even the kind of direction that Mr. Allen has given today about the Forest Service willing to clean it up in any event.
So you're really saying the best chance of getting this cleaned up anytime soon is to pass this piece of legislation which would allow the state agency and the federal agency to work together to do it, and they'll pay for it?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Keith.
And as far as the Forest Service is concerned, it is your intent in disposing of the radioactive portions of this site and the problem that the federal government intends to comply with standards that in its mind are as strict or stricter than currently what the state has as its standards.
Yes.
On the book. Has that been put in writing?
Well, we have, Mr. Chairman, we have Mr. Perry's letter that indicates that's his interpretation of the federal law, and I think Mr. Carlin's letter does indicate the conflicts between federal and state standards are resolved in favor of federal agency standards. I don't know if that necessarily precludes using the stricter of the federal state standards. Which was stricter? That they would use?
Whichever was stricter.
Okay, so
yeah.
Mr.
Go ahead. I'm sitting here and I'm getting driven a little bit to distraction by some of it, quite, and it's not common on anybody. But
the longer we stay on it, the more distracted we get.
Yeah, that seems to be a key point. And the point is, regardless of who ought to have the authority, whether the laws are clear, whether they're explicit on this stuff, the question is, we're going to get this stuff cleaned up, and in dealing with the cleanup, are we going to deal with it in a way that it's going to meet some strict standards in terms of disposal? You know, your letter, Mr. Perry, did indicate that the federal government, under some certain circumstances, could decide not to apply state standards. If they effectively prohibited the disposal of the waste, they would result in a greater risk. They're technically impractical. Standards not being consistently applied in similar circumstances, etc. Maybe there's a fear that once we get into this, pass the law, the federal government will decide that Oregon standards fall into one of those categories, so therefore we're not going to abide by them. But there is no indication that that is the case right now from your understanding of those state standards vis-a-vis what the feds want to do. Is that the nub of it?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Keesley.
Any other questions? Chairman's AWOL.
He's being driven and distracted. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will close the hearing on House Bill 2051 and open the work session on House Bill 2051. There are no proposed amendments to the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move 2051 to the floor with a due pass.
Okay, it's been moved to send 2051 to the floor with a due pass. Comments, questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, in reference to that last question, I do intend to vote to move it on. I would like some, in reference to some statement from the federal government as to the point I made about intent of complying with the state standards as they now relate to this material. I think that would be an important part of the record, and I'd like to see it for the final legislative body finish its work on it.
All right. Can we get that, Mr. Graney?
Yes, Mr.
All right. Other questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hostica.
I think I'm going to vote no, partly because I don't want to carry the bill, but the other reason
I wasn't going to ask you, Representative.
The other reason is that I've, throughout my legislative career, have encountered a number of instances like this of federal and state conflicts, and it seems that we are continually, as we just did in HJR 3, resolving those conflicts by abrogating our own ability to control our future because of some need to comply with the feds. And I've probably most directly encountered this in the issue of hydroelectric facility siting. And I've just, this looks to me like another situation in which there are other ways that this problem could be resolved without the state going on record saying we're going to once again either repeal or exempt somebody, repeal a law or exempt somebody from state standards because the feds aren't willing to, go along or to do the kind of things that the state wants. And I don't think that that's the kind of posture I want to be in as a representative of the people of the state of Oregon. And as part of the sovereign body, I'll start using that kind of language because that's what I believe we are, a sovereign body, and yet we're being asked to make changes based upon another sovereignty which doesn't seem to be willing to recognize us. And as long as this problem could be solved in other ways, I'd prefer to see it solved in those other ways.
I appreciate your comments, Representative Hostia. I'm going to vote for it reluctantly. I had thought last time when we did the Lakeview thing that that would be the end of it, but apparently it's not. My great feeling is that those sites ought to be cleaned up. If you look at the Superfund, we get an indication of how lengthy these things can be. My own feeling is looking at the pieces and recalling last year's discussion, they are less likely to be cleaned up unless we do something like this, and for that reason I am willing to support them.